two-time Olympic gold medalist, still the Canadian record holder in the 100 meter, and he's Oakville's own. He is Donovan Bailey. How's it going, Donovan?
It's a great day, fellas. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing better since I heard you on CBC calm me down after your grass doesn't break 20 seconds in the heats, and then he throws down a 19.73 in the semi. Thank you for that.
Well, never you worry. A big part of the problem, seriously, is that, you know, I have definitely the great opportunity to kind of educate you know, the public on kind of how professional track and field works. Here's what happens. Andre, after he did a personal best in the 100 meters, your body almost gets flat. So it almost like, no matter how much effort you put into a race, you're just not going to have that pep, right? So I knew that it was going to be all right. And he was just running to make sure that he got a lane. I mean, he really wasn't, although if he put a lot more effort in, it might have got hurt. But I knew that when he knew he was in, getting home, resting, getting some therapy, sleep, some good food, probably called his mom and his partner and his kids. And next day was going to be a different story, man. So yeah, no problem. Keep watching. He's going to do some things.
Oh, man. I want to talk about him. One comment on the 100, though. I want to ask you about that, Donovan, before we move on to the 200 and where Andre's headed. But, you know, did you have Marcel Jacobs in the pool? Because I didn't, going into that race, although it was you. Did you think he was the guy, well, a guy this year going into the Olympics?
Well, going into the Olympics, no. But I'm just saying to you, he definitely didn't come from anywhere. And the other thing is that I was watching him, you know, from the rounds. The thing about Marcel, he's a big guy. And what's crazy is that he got comfortable really quickly, and he got comfortable without the spotlight being shining upon him. So in the finals, one of the things I'd said was the race was going to be between Curley and Lamont in the middle of the track. But I thought that because both of those guys were going to be together, that one of them might tie up, or one of them, or both of them might make a mistake. And so Andre being on the outside, I definitely thought he was going to be the spoiler. I thought that Andre was going to, if Andre had the same start that he had in the heats, he would have been the Olympic champion in the 100 meters because he executed excellently, man. I knew that, I didn't know that, Lamont Marcel Jacobs was going to run that fast. He did run. He's the European 60-meter champion. He ran 6:47 indoors. So, calculating that, I mean, the time that he ran is no surprise.
So do you think 3 years from now, he's 26, Andre de Grasse, and let's stick on the 100 meter because I think he's the gold medal favorite all of a sudden in the 200 meter, and right, not surprising considering he's the silver medalist with Usain Bolt in the field, and he ain't there. But in the 100 meter, he runs a 9.89. He's 26. Mm-hmm. 3 years from now, like, how much improvement can you imagine? That's a personal best for him, and he ends up with the bronze. How much improvement is there left for de Grasse in the 100 meter?
Oh, tons. I mean, I think that one of the things that we all need to recognize, that I love the fact that people are spending a lot of time talking about Andre's times this year. His times are really relevant to me. One of the things that he's done in every single race is work on his biomechanics have drastically improved over this year. Obviously, his consistency coming out of the blocks and his ability to execute. I mean, that's so he's going to continue to do that, as well as he's going to hit the weight room at some point, which means that his first 30 meters out of the block is going to improve. So there's always, with professional athletes, professional sprinters, there's always room for improvement. So you're always going to be tinkering with things, diet changes, weightlifting, thinking about his race scheduling, doing more twos, you know, whatever. But, Andre de Grasse still has a ways to go in improvement, man. He's an awesome kid, and I only wish him good health, as he continues to climb.
Donovan, can you talk a little bit about what kind of a guy he is? Because I was, you know, I've been watching. Obviously, he's the star of many television commercials now. God love him. but you know, I always think of there's kind of a sprinter personality type. No slight, right? But I'm not. This is not a slight. But you know, it requires an enormous amount of self belief to do what you guys do. And I think of you, and I think of Usain Bolt, and I think of a lot of American guys sprinters. There's right. kind of, you know, you're, it's not a, it's not a, it's an individual sport, and there's a, you know, a high degree of obvious confidence. Let's put it that way. And he doesn't seem quite like, he doesn't seem quite like the same kind of guy as, you know, and maybe that's just a veneer. But he seems kind of self-effacing for a sprinter. Like, what's he like?
That is a beautiful veneer. That is a beautiful, listen, here's the thing. With every athlete, you're going to always have different personalities, right? And one of the things I love about Andre, he's a giant killer. He'll smile at you and he'll take your heart out. You know, so, I mean, maybe I'll smile at you and take your heart out, but, I mean, at some point I'm going to be serious, right? Or Usain was the same way. Usain will tell you, hold up, be quiet, I'm about to take your heart out. But I mean, no, Andre, any athlete at the highest level in any individual sport, frankly, any person that is successful on this planet has to have, you know, some level of edginess. And believe me, Andre is someone who is confident and believes in his own abilities.
So is he the favorite to win the gold medal in the 200 meter, in your opinion?
He was my favorite before you guys saw the first heat. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andre, I mean, at the end of the 200, at the end of the 100 meters, I'm like, all right, he's fine. Because, I mean, obviously, you know, his ability to get out of the blocks, essentially slingshot across the turn, where he'll generate top speed, and then he's the person that decelerates the least in the sprints these days, in the 100 and the 200. He's the person that decelerates the least. He actually is at his best when he's, like, relaxed and at top speed. So, yeah, I believe that if Andre does not win the gold, he would be upset.
What is it? You know, and obviously, there, you know, the obvious differences between the two races, between the 100 and the 200, Donovan. But what makes a great 200 meter runner? Is it different than what makes a great 100 meter runner?
Well, first of all, it's twice as far. So I mean, the possibilities yes. of making mistakes. For all you math. right, but the possibilities of making a mistake, in 100 is obviously you have a shorter time to correct, and also you got to have hellified power come out of the blocks. The start sets up both races, mm-hmm. and so you know, Andre made a mistake. I saw mistakes. I mean, I want him to come on and tell you guys about the mistakes that he did. But I saw mistakes in the finals up to 100 meters. Now, if he makes the same mistakes in the deuce, he will be able to catch them and pass them. You know, so that's why he's my favorite.
So he runs the 100. Aaron Brown decides not to run the 100, even though he qualified for it. He is also into the 200-meter final. How unusual, though, is it to have two heats of 200 meters in the same day? Because they run the heats, and then they run the semifinal just hours apart.
Well, it's been that way. I mean, that's what the program has been for a couple of years. So running, basically, it's two runs. Yeah. You know, so one of the reasons why it is that you see guys conserve their energy in the heats, in the first heat anyways, is that. You know, so, you know, it's very important for you to understand how to manage your own energy, you know, and your own speed. Because we saw what happened in the 100 meters with Bing Tang Su. You know, and with Ronnie Baker. So, you know, again, you can shoot your shot, but make sure you shoot your shot, you know, when there's some hardware to be had at the end of the race.
Not looking past the 200 for sure, Donovan, but, you know, looking past the 200, how do you feel about Canada? How's the 4x1 looking for you right now for Canada?
Well, you got two guys. First of all, it looks amazing. I know that yeah. my boy Glenroy has probably been doing baton work, especially for those two other guys who did not make the 100 meter. They didn't even get out. I don't think they got out of their heats. Mm-hmm. So I'm very certain he's working them hard, making sure that there's a precision in which this baton fragile baton is held and passed. So, I mean, I'm going to send a note to him, and I'm going to send a few choice words to these guys to let them understand, man, that we're at a place right now where this is their greatest opportunity to get to the finals and to get on the podium, so they better take advantage of it. So our chances in the relay are amazing. There's, I mean, the Chinese team's going to be like, there's going to be a bunch of teams that are going to come from that you guys are not going to hear about before. So, I mean, the Japanese team's going to be excellent. Like, again, the powerhouse teams we know are always going to be, you know, Jamaica and the UK and the USA. But China, Japan is going to be excellent. Trinidad and Tobago is going to be excellent. So Canada has a great chance with you got two sprinters that are top top 10 in the world in their events, and hopefully I see Aaron and Andre on the podium in the 200. I too am looking forward to the relay too. So you're definitely not speaking out of turn. I mean there's nothing wrong with being optimistic and confident, and so we can see these kids doing their thing and hopefully hearing the national anthem of Canada play.
Yeah, in the heat and humidity. Talking to Donovan Bailey, because they keep talking about how hot it is, and the distance runners, not big fans, but they keep talking about how the sprinters love it. Like, is there a temperature and a humidity level in which that's not true, or is it the hotter and the more humid, the better?
I love that hot and muggy that you could even chew on it, man. I mean, like, it is essentially all you got to do is I left here and I went to Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. We were training and it was like 90 degrees with like 1,000,000% humidity. And then I went from there to Austin, Texas. And some days we're training with 100 degrees, 110 degrees. And all you got to do is stay hydrated because everything around, first of all, it's very easy for you to stretch and for you to, you know, kind of get the elasticity in your muscle, it comes very easy. But all you have to do is continue hydrating. Sprinters love hot, muggy weather. And also, Tokyo is at altitude, you know, so the air is a little thinner. So again, I tell these kids, man, take full advantage because get there, run your best times. You don't know when that's going to happen again or when there's going to be such great conditions. The sprinters love it. The sprinters love hot, muggy. not so much for the distance guys. Sorry for the distance guys, but not so much.
Yeah, I don't think Mohamed likes it quite as much, but you know, like those guys, they're working hard, man. I feel for the distance guys. How would you have felt running in an empty stadium, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I definitely ran in a couple of meets. I mean, I ran in Sarajevo, there wasn't a lot of people there. The first meets in Doha, there weren't a lot of people there. But I think that for me, the focus would have been the situation at hand. I mean, I'm talking to you guys about the opportunity that's presenting itself to these kids, and this opportunity may never, ever, ever come again. If I was competing today, I would think about the gravity of the situation and how important it is. So my focus would definitely be on winning and executing. But it's awfully strange to see, you know, Vahum, like, probably run the greatest track event in the history of the world, and there's nobody there. Like, you see Marcel Jacobs, being the first Italian to cross the line, and the only person that there is a few camera guys and his teammates. I mean, my God, listen, it's after you win the World Championships and the Olympic Games, which I've been blessed to do a few times, you have probably 50 cameramen on the track, alone. And then you probably have 3,000 media, 3,000 to 4,000 media people, and then a stadium with 100,000 plus people, as well as the entire planet looking at you. My God, so that's just a different kind of high. And I don't know, again, how I'd feel. I mean, I'm very certain that I'm someone that would be focused. But yeah, it is definitely tough to when I watch these kids and they can't celebrate, kind of like how we did, because you know you're essentially focused on your race or on your event, and then you pass the line, and all of a sudden you got the big stadium, whoa, that sort of thing, and these guys don't get it, man. And I actually thought that what they were gonna do actually was they were gonna pipe in music like they do for UFC or you know boxing or whatever. I thought they were gonna pump in like audience music, because I'm very certain, you know, we got technology where it allows us to do that. But no, it's, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's really sad, and I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, the World Championships next year, and hopefully there's a full stadium, and, you know, and things are back to normal, and these guys continue on their quest to be great.